Welcome back, listeners. We cannot tell you how excited we are about our guest today. She came to us by way of Ellie DeMiss, who has been a friend of the podcast pretty much since its inception. And Ellie sent me this article called The Experience Tax, who was written by our guest today. And we are just so excited to share all of her learnings.
Yeah, we'll let you hear exactly about what that is from Teen herself. But I think, yeah, just as Monica and I read this article, so many things just resonated with us in a way that I haven't heard like imposter syndrome and sexism and racism be talked about before in context of, becoming an engineer, changing careers into engineering. And I think there were so many aha moments for us. And I'm just going to read a little teaser quote here about something we can do to combat this phenomenon. And Teen says, the most important thing we can do as individuals is to remind ourselves that we do deserve our seat at the table. We bring valuable perspective and our voices matter. It's not just your imposter syndrome telling you that you don't belong. It's systemic racism and sexism. And we've been dealing with that shit forever. So it's just that idea that like we are not beholden to this like affliction of imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen to you in a vacuum. It's like a result of these systems that have been designed intentionally to keep people like us out. And it's just a refreshing perspective, I think.
Yeah. And almost a bit of a relief, because a lot of times I feel like it's framed in a way where it's like, imposter syndrome is a you problem. Like it almost like you got yourself into this mess and you got to get yourself out. But that's really not the case. We did not create it. It has existed long before our time. And unfortunately, it will probably continue to, but that's why we're here sharing Teen with you, because she has a ton of knowledge that she's accumulated about how we can start to try and break these systems apart and just feel more empowered, and how companies in turn can help all employees find that seat at the table.
100%. With that, let's stop talking about it so you can hear from Teen herself, and please enjoy.
Christine Zekas, who goes by Teen, is an educator turned software engineer, keynote speaker, and diversity, equity, and inclusion activist. She champions DE&I in the tech industry while delivering clean, well-tested code. She also mentors other career changers, especially those who are underrepresented in tech, and speaks on panels and at tech conferences about career changers, imposter syndrome, and DE&I in the industry. Welcome, Teen. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Welcome, Teen. I feel like if we could have handpicked a more perfect guest for just the just the topics that we cover on imposter. I feel like
we have an imposter syndrome coach in our midst.
Yeah, I feel like everything from that intro is like exactly what we talk about a lot on this podcast. So I'm so excited to hear your perspective on everything. And Monica and I have both like read a bunch of your articles on Medium. And we encourage all of our listeners to go read them too. They're so illuminating. I was just like going down rabbit hole because I would see a link to one. I would keep going. So I'm so excited for you to share all of those thoughts with listeners and just hear about your experience, because we also share some history at Dev Bootcamp Chicago. So
Chicago, oh, rest in peace.
We're kindred spirits there, and we that place, you know, something in the water at that place just produces amazing people. Cultivates some amazing people. That produces.
Wasn't yoga part of your curriculum? Like, was Dev Bootcamp the one that they? That must be it.
Yes.
It was yoga and engineering empathy, which was like a curriculum on how to be a human in coding.
It needs to be taught, weirdly enough.
Yeah. Well, I think there is still that stereotype that a developer is just like alone in a basement and not interacting with any other humans. Which,
by the way, you are right now, as you've already disclosed.
Oh, that's true. All right. Technically, I'm alone in my basement, but that's just so I can be far from the children who might wake up at any moment.
No, you're so right. Whenever I describe like what I thought an engineer was when I was little, I always describe it as like a hacker in a basement, like trying to hack into the government. Like the image I have in my, with big headphones on.
My spouse and I watched Hackers the other night. I had never seen it before and it was amazing. we had watched a trailer of some movie, like a futuristic movie from the 70s that took place in the 90s. And then we watched Hackers and he said, the only thing more wild than what people in the 70s thought that people in the 90s would dress like was what people in the 90s thought people in the 90s dressed like. And yes, that the like hackers definitely perpetuated those stereotypes.
I need to check that out.
Yes.
The Hollywood representation of like software engineers and developers, I find fascinating. First of all, just the fact that everyone is referred to as coders.
Coders.
I don't know where that came from. I've never referred to myself as that and like, or been referred to as that in like a professional setting. I just find it so, and I like the full like mouthfeel of saying software engineer or software developer. Like, I feel like coder, I feel a little diminished.
Well, there's of course controversy around software engineer because there are other engineer titles where that indicates some kind of licensure or specific degree. And so the people who are gatekeeping in the community are like, you can't call yourself a software engineer if you only went to a boot camp. And
well, I have a certificate from Hack Reactor, which I'm happy to show them. Exactly. And it's on my LinkedIn. So who's laughing now? Who's gatekeeping now?
Well, it's interesting. My mom always refers to it as programmers. So I am actually a third generation woman programmer.
Oh my God. Oh,
say more.
Yeah. My mom is an IT architect, and her mom was divorced in the 60s and needed to get a job to raise five kids and became a programmer when like just after the point where that was like considered women's work, you know? So yeah, we're a long line of women in tech.
And programming, a lot of pre-internet programming, which blows my mind because I can't do anything without the internet.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't know how to conceptualize it when they would talk about those things. And I think that's why I just thought of that as something other people do.
So that's a great segue into kind of our first question for you, which is like, you started your career in teaching and you got your master's in education. So it seems like you kind of shunned that part of your family, that legacy, but then you came back around. Was it that like drove you back? What made you kind of veer off that path in the first place and then kind of come back later on?
Oh, it was a winding road. So I wanted to be a math teacher. And in undergrad, I took calculus and it kicked my butt and I ran crying to the humanities. I majored in Black studies, psychology, and minored in music and worked at the Container Store. Like, I had no plan. A couple years later, I moved back to Chicago to get a degree in elementary education. And my first placement to observe in a classroom was in a middle school math class. And I remembered all the reasons I wanted to teach math. So calculus and I had a rematch. I did full-time education grad school at night and full-time undergrad math during the day. Got my degree, started teaching, hated it. I was a full-time teacher with my own classroom for 6 days. that's the correct phrase for that.
Wow.
I lost 7 pounds in 5 days.
Oh my God.
Panic attacks every day. Classroom management and I were like, I can teach, you know, a math concept in 12 different ways, but I only know one way to say, like, don't talk when someone else is talking, except for inserting curse words.
Yeah.
So while I tried to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life, I ended up as a long-term sub at my old high school. There were 5 math teachers having babies that year. So I just went from every, you know, I taught every kind of math. And one of the teachers also taught AP Computer Science, which was like an intro to Java course. So I was staying a chapter ahead of the kids and realized I kind of liked coding. I think the thing that I enjoyed was that all of the students could have a different answer and be right. Like in math, it's like, okay, did everyone get 12? For this, it was like, oh, there's actually creativity in programming, which I didn't know based on the stereotypes, right? So that's when I started researching boot camps. And I went to Dev Boot Camp in 2015 and have been a software engineer ever since.
Wow. Okay. We have so much more in common too. I was also a teacher for 2 years.
Really?
I also couldn't manage the classroom and get them to stop talking. And they were only first graders.
Like, oh my goodness. Bless you for...
I had a 2-year commitment and then I was gone. So I totally, totally empathize. I know what you're talking about there. And I started Dev Bootcamp in 2015 too. I must've just missed you because I started in December of 2015.
Okay. Yeah. I finished in August, 2015. Yes, wow.
We just missed by like one cohort. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I was a bumblebee, if that helps.
I was, sea lion. I was a sea lion.
I think summer cohorts were insects. I was like bumblebees and grasshoppers and things like that.
Just the cute little, those cute little things they did with us. But that is, I love that. I feel like, so it was really just that computer science class that you were teaching that kind of, then were you like, oh my gosh, like mom, guess what I'm doing now? And was she like so pumped?
What's funny enough is that it was my dad who pointed it out. He was like, oh, well, you're going to be the third woman. And I was like, what? And like, I had forgotten that my grandmother used to be a programmer. Like it was just not on my radar at all. So yes, my mom viewed it as me just like coming home, you know, finally realizing that, that I have these, you know, reasoning skills. I mean, math teacher, obviously, you know, understood those things. I think I had one advantage in coding interviews because whiteboarding was literally my job, right? It's like, break down the problem into steps and talk through your process on this whiteboard. Like, got it. I can do that.
Totally.
Yeah. If you ever want to get back into teaching and can teach a course on that, I will take it. I will sign up. I feel like I've exhausted all of the internet resources that I've found and I am very bad and scared of it.
Right. When I start that class, I will invite you and credit you for the idea.
Yeah. We both interviewed during the pandemic. So we were very lucky to not have to do whiteboarding. That was amazing.
Yeah. Well, one thing that the bootcamp did that I really appreciated was they matched us up into small groups of accountability buddies. So there were
four. Oh my God. Triggering. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. That has left my brain until this moment. I am so triggered.
So our accountability buddies, apologies for bringing up possibly bad memories. We met every week until all four of us had a job.
Wow.
Whoa.
And two of us actually ended up at the same company. And so it was nice to have people who were going through the same things, holding you accountable in terms of, you know, okay, I'm going to apply for X number of jobs this week. And then next week, okay, did you do it? And just giving each other ideas. So that was really helpful. And then for my first few years in the industry, I kept in touch with other cohort mates. And, you know, we were talking openly about salary and about, you know, different challenges we were facing. It was just, it was nice to have people who had been doing it the same amount of time I had, and just knowing, okay, like, oh, okay, this person made senior. Okay, let's, like, you know, kind of compare and make sure we're on track.
And what do you think, did any skills that you built while going through teaching education come in handy, either at boot camp or like in that first job?
Oh, for sure. So even in interviews, one thing I said in my interview that landed my first job was that I am a software developer who can speak human. Mm. You know, just the idea that I can convey technical concepts to someone who doesn't have a background in that area, and I can meet people at whatever level they're at and talk about the concepts. And so that has been invaluable in terms of working within a team and then working cross-functionally with folks in other fields. And honestly, just the ability to not talk down to people. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, even just the idea when people are like, oh, this is not a technical person, which I think is just a silly adjective to apply to a human. But, you know, just being able to communicate with empathy, I think has been huge for me.
100%. Like, it's crazy how, and I tell people that all the time, trying to find their first job out of boot camps, like, that piece is so much more important than the technical skills. Like, if you can speak respectfully and like work collaboratively, mm-hmm. and people want to work with you, like, if you're missing some of those technical skills, like, they can see that you can be taught, and mm-hmm. like, and you'll want to be taught and want to take that feedback. And it's right. just, yeah. And people don't, sometimes you're like, oh, that's just like, everyone does that. But no, it's,
they don't though. Right. They really don't. Yeah.
If something comes naturally to you, you assume that everyone has that skill. It's like, no, this is actually vital and lacking, severely lacking. and it's true. I mean, when you're going for a junior developer role, really no one's hiring you for your tech skills. Like, you don't have any, right? Like, you, I mean,
you can't do anything.
A sponge. And no. So demonstrating that you can learn new things and demonstrating that you can, you know, work well with a team. Like, that's the stuff that's important.
Yeah. And like taking feedback and just like general curiosity overall, mm-hmm. because no one expects you to like know anything in that role, but they do expect you to want to learn whatever like the best practices are that company has in place and why.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and you just reminded me one of the other pieces I used to use a lot was just being a lifelong learner. And yes. that, you know, in this industry, you're never going to know all the things. The point is to be curious and be able to learn as you go.
Did you ever do a panel at Dev Bootcamp where you talked to like prospective people?
I did.
Did you do one in August? Like when you were almost done? Because
I don't know.
If you did one in like September, like right when you finished, like I feel, I don't know, something about you is so familiar to me that I'm like, were you on the panel?
Entirely possible.
Like you very well could have been on the panel that convinced me to do this. Cause some of the things wow. you're saying, some of the things you're saying were, I remember someone saying like, I don't know if this is you, but someone was like, you know, you kind of, if you don't leave feeling like you just kind of learned how to Google things, then like it's basically like, we're teaching you how to like Google, like we're teaching you how to learn all this stuff about lifelong learning. Like oh, if you
that,
don't,
that very well could have been me. I don't know.
It was something like, if you don't feel a little bit slighted by paying money to learn how to Google, then like you did it wrong. It was something to that effect. Was that you?
I don't know, but I'm gonna claim it and say, yes, I am responsible for you joining the industry. You're welcome, world.
I really feel like that it could have been, but that's hilarious. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I'm sorry for derailing, but yeah, the lifelong, like that's exactly what I tell everyone. Like you're never mm-hmm. going to know even a small amount of, you know, like such a tiny amount of like even your domain. Like I'm an iOS engineer. I only know, you know, that like a small portion of iOS. There's some things I've never mm-hmm. touched, never heard of, let alone Android development, which Monica does. Like you just, there are so many things and like, yeah. you can't beat yourself up for not knowing them. And your job is to, like, learn how to do those things.
Yeah. In my last role, every time I opened up JavaScript, anything, I was like, I got to take full stack off of my resume. Like, no, thank you. I don't even know what I'm looking at. And then my next role, the title was backend engineer. So I was like, okay,
I'll just leave that. Yeah.
So I want to talk about your article, which is how we actually connected and got you onto this podcast, because Ellie, who's a friend of the podcast, has been interviewed by us a couple times, sent it to me. And I read it and immediately was like, oh my gosh, put me in touch with this woman, because you wrote about this phenomenon you've coined called the experience tax. And I want to give you the floor to speak about what is it and why would you say that Black women, underrepresented women in tech are more likely to pay it?
Absolutely. So the experience tax is basically the extra time and energy that underrepresented folks in tech have to put into their jobs while they're trying to also gain experience. So, for example, in my first 5 years as a developer, I worked at 4 different companies. Each time I left because of something having to do with racism or sexism. And each time I had to, you know, interview, juggle, you know, offers and negotiations, ramp up on a new code base and a new culture and learn the, you know, the ins and outs of a new team, and then experience a different flavor of microaggressions, and then decide whether that met the, you know, the occasion to leave again. And so, I actually came up with the term after I was about 6 months into a role, and someone on my team who I'd been working with every day said, oh, so is this your first dev role? And I said, no, I've been doing this for 5 years. And then I lost my mind. I had a whole bout of imposter syndrome. And then I remembered that his experience as a cishet white male was very different from mine. And that, like, those 5 years looked really different. I was, you know, having to move around a lot. And all of that took time and energy that was not spent on, you know, learning about scaling and, you know, race conditions or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, that my colleagues would have been working on.
And it's interesting because you're speaking about, you know, a lot about like the actual logistics of moving and the time it takes to ramp up. I feel like there's also this whole other component though, which is like the emotional toll that it takes on you as well, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, even as you're ramping up, I feel like you're still, after having all of these experiences, you're still kind of on guard, and it, absolutely. You know, it kind of compounds the burnout in that way. Whereas, you know, then you wind up in another role and you see sort of like the same mm-hmm. events unfolding, and it just becomes, you know, it kind of like takes more and more of a toll each time.
Sure. Well, and that's such a good point, because I didn't even mention the 2 days that I didn't get any work done after that teammate asked me if it was my first dev role, you know, that I spent, you know, time and energy going through anger and frustration and imposter syndrome and whatever else. And yeah, during that time, I was not doing my job for sure.
It's so, I think both Monica and I have experienced that, like a version of that as well, with just already kind of having that internal doubt and then that being verbalized to you, of course, mm-hmm. is like confirming your worst fears. And we're constantly trying to do everything possible to not be perceived as a novice, like to be perceived mm-hmm. as competent and good at our jobs. And I remember this, I think I talked about it on one of the podcasts, but I remember this instance a couple of weeks ago where I was, imposter syndrome comes up a lot for me when I'm interviewing other people, because I'm like, mm-hmm. oh God, could I even pass this interview? Like, what is this? Like, I actually did pass it just a couple months ago, Taylor, like you can pass it. It's fine. But I was working with someone on like a new question, a new interview question. And he was basically like, yeah, you know, this kind of just screens for anyone who can't code their way out of a box. Like just, you know, really flippantly described the problem. And I looked at the question. I was like, what is this even saying? Like, I don't understand what this is talking about. Like, I can't code my way out of a box. What is this? And he was like, he set aside time for us to go over the problem. And I spent hours that day trying to solve that problem in a way that I could like explain, like, and coherently try to like, you know, describe my thought process to him in this meeting, because for some reason I thought he was going to like ask me to solve it for him, which I'm not being interviewed, like, you know, right. So, but yeah, it's like when that seed of doubt comes in, mm-hmm. you're just like, you do everything you can. Well, there's the anger, frustration. And then you're like, wait, do I not know anything? Like, it's just that right. constant, like internal mm-hmm. monologue of, am I good enough? Like, does he see something that I'm not seeing? And right. it's exhausting, and it wastes time that you could be learning other things.
And, you know, even just the language that we use could have changed that completely, right? You know, not, you know, this is my easy question that just determines whether you're an idiot or not. You know, you could say, you could frame that in a different way that has empathy. And, you know, it's like, this is a question I use because, you know, it helps me figure out what the person's thought process is or whatever. And then you don't have the implication in there that, like, you know, unless you're a moron, you could do this.
Yeah. Even a step further and saying, do you have any feedback about this recently, having recently gone through our mm-hmm. interview process? How does this sound to you? But it was presented in such a way where he was like, I've used this interview hundreds of times. I know it down to a science, exactly what the person's going to say and exactly what responses they're going to give. And I know, and I can tell from that. And I was just like, whew, I'm glad I didn't get this question.
Yep. Oh, man.
I think your point about just like changing the language it resonates with me so much. I had another experience a few weeks ago where I had a pull request up, and this was like a pull request something that I had been kind of collaborating with with a teammate, because he had a lot of work on his plate and I was also still ramping up and wanted to help out and learn some new stuff. And it just almost comically snowballed into this much bigger thing where now people from all sorts of other teams were weighing in and like everyone had an opinion. And I kid you not, I just merged it today. I think literally 2 months later. This was supposed to take like a week. But it just kept on, the scope kept on growing and people wanted to do things differently. And all of a sudden it became this kind of like archetypal like pull request that we were pioneering. And at one point there was some dependency that I was relying on, but had maybe imported from the wrong package or something like that. And I got some feedback or a comment on a PR from someone who just said, like, this is sketchy.
Yeah.
And it just irked me so much because it was so unhelpful. Right. It was, you know, I'm kind of out of my depth here. I'm trying to learn, and I'm also not a complete novice, and I also, you know, try and write very thoughtful feedback when I'm giving feedback, or I'll like, you know, ask a question if something's unclear, like, why is this here? And it was just like, how this does nothing except kind of make me feel bad.
Right. I think I'm going to bring it back to Dev Bootcamp. we were given a
Dev Bootcamp for... should, too bad they're not around because they should sponsor this season of our podcast.
Truly.
The framework for giving feedback was ask. Feedback should be actionable, specific, and kind. And that was none of those things, right? Like, what am I supposed to do about this is sketchy? That's not actionable. Yeah. It is completely vague and it's not said in a way that is, that lets me know that your purpose is to like make this code better or to help me learn something. It's just like, I just wanted to say something. I'm not going to give you any kind of helpful feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it feels like almost like an exclusionary, like we already feel like tech is this like boys club and it just kind of sounds like it's a way that like guys talk to each other. Like that's sketchy, you know, like
100%.
It's like, you need to consider your audience and like, maybe that's fine for someone, you know, really well, or you've been working with for 5 years who knows you and your intentions and is going to like maybe laugh at that. I don't know. I don't even know what you would want out of that, but yeah, it's like just recognizing that not everyone works or communicates the same way you do.
It's like what, going back to what you said, Taylor, about the sort of like flippant attitude. I have zero tolerance for that. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's such a, I don't want to use the word bro-y because I've worked with women who I feel like can be guilty of this as well. But it's just sort of that like lack of compassion, lack of empathy, and borderline like disrespectful attitude of, and I understand, you know, things are hard right now because we're all virtual and things can come off on Slack or in emails as like curt and short. And I'm certainly guilty of like getting in my head about that. But I think in like both of these examples, and Tien, certainly in your example, they were just, it was just kind of thoughtless and also like unkind.
You just reminded me of something and I was trying to find the source and I can't, but I heard this and it just changed my view on diversity work, which is, you know, the golden rule is to treat others as you want to be treated. The platinum rule is to treat others as they want to be treated.
Yes.
And just
I love like, that.
You have to approach your interactions with other humans with an amount of curiosity that, you know, that we really don't see. So someone might, you know, as Taylor, as you were saying, you know, someone might be like, oh, well, like that's how me and my guys talk to each other. Yeah. Like I would know what they meant if they said this is sketchy or whatever. And it's like, no, like think about how the other person wants to receive feedback. And that's a thing that we are not there yet in the industry.
Unfortunately, we don't have hours of time to methodically plan out how we can interact with every single person in our lives, but that's why it should always be a little bit more like approach with caution. Like if you think that the question that you're about to ask could be taken the wrong way, then don't ask it.
I can't get over that someone asked you that question. That is so, so rude. Like, you didn't even think of the implication of that question. Like, oh, what if this person has been in the industry for a long time? Me asking this could actually be extremely rude. Like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry.
Well, thank you. It was jarring and it took a moment to be like, yeah, that's an assumption that was made probably because I'm a Black woman. Like I just couldn't. It's frustrating when you have to wrestle with like, am I in a moment where I'm dealing with racism or sexism, or am I just having a rough interaction, you know? And it's frustrating to have that layer of things when you're, you know, trying to just interact with your coworkers.
Yeah. And to constantly have the default of being like, oh, they didn't mean that. Like maybe I'm being sensitive or something. And maybe you don't have that, but I know that's something that I do. I'm like, oh, there's no way he could have possibly meant it that way. Like that would be outrageous.
I am so over the benefit of the doubt. I specifically try to give people feedback. In this case, I did not. I decided that that was not going to help anyone. But you know, if there's a situation where I have to continue to interact with someone and I want to give them feedback, I try to do it and I try to be, you know, pretty clear. And when the person continues to do the thing, I just write them off forever. Like that's sort of my,
you give them one chance.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of how you do that? Like, how do you say, can I give you some feedback? Whenever anyone mentions the word feedback or can I give you feedback? I'm like,
oh, that's a hard one. It depends on the relationship.
Yeah.
Right. So if it's my manager, I feel completely in the right to be like, hey, you know, I have some feedback about, you know, our interaction yesterday. Is now a good time to talk about it? Like that feels fine.
Yeah.
When it's your peer, it's really awkward because it does not feel like your job to give feedback. So sometimes I will frame it, especially if it was something that was done in public, I will frame it as like, you know, I heard this thing this way and I know that you didn't mean it this way, but I wanted to let you know in case others were also interpreting it this other way, you know? And so I don't frame it as like, I was offended by what you said.
Yeah.
Just to say like, hey, I know you, and I know that you didn't mean this in a negative way, but I wanted to let you know, this is the connotation that I heard, just so you know that moving forward. And, you know, kind of starting it with, so that you're kind of heading off that defensiveness, starting that with, I know you did have good intentions. We can start from a place of, I know you didn't come in here trying to be racist, right? Like, so I could start with, I know that the intentions were good. You don't have to tell me about how your intentions were good. Yeah. I know that. Here's how it impacted me and how it might've impacted others, just so you know.
Wow. And how kind of you thinking of their feelings when you're giving them feedback on a situation that affected you.
It is not out of kindness. Honestly, it is a mechanism I developed to try to have that feedback penetrate defensiveness.
Yeah. Right? Cause I feel like you could hit a wall with people. It won't resonate if they feel like they're being attacked all of a sudden.
Yeah. If I say, hey, that thing you said was kind of racist, they're going to be like, I'm not a racist.
No, it's like, alarm bells going off. And then that, you know, but yeah, it's like, I think approaching it from that angle, almost kind of like, you know, kind of like, Evelyn, like, hey, like I understood what you meant, but just here's how it could have been taken. And I don't want you to get in that situation with someone else who maybe doesn't know.
Right. Clearly I'm not a person who took it this way, but someone who didn't know you quite as well as I do might've gotten the wrong idea. Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to butter people up to, for them to hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about you, cause you've mentioned a bit about, you know, wrestling with the decision about whether, you know, like when to give people feedback, when it's appropriate, whatnot. But talking on a grander scale, because you've been faced on several occasions the decision of like whether to leave a company based on some micro and macro aggressions that you've gone through. And can you walk us through sort of like what that process looked like and what are sort of the questions that you ask yourself when you're evaluating the relationship with said company and whether it's worth it to try and work it out, try and sort it out with HR, or when you can already see that the writing's on the wall and it's not worth any more of your time and energy to stick it out?
Sure. I have very rarely ever given anyone a surprise during an interview, during an exit interview. I am constantly giving feedback. When I'm at a company, HR knows me, and we're talking about the diversity efforts. I'm talking with the CEO about it. You know, in each company that I left, I was in conversations with either the head of HR or the CEO about these issues for months before, you know, actually saying, okay, I got to go. And for me, I am an optimist in that when I see that something is broken, I try to help fix it. And it's usually once I'm in that state for a little while and seeing what the pushback looks like and seeing, okay, this is not a place that is ready to change in this way, that's when I usually make that switch. Or, you know, if something horrific happens, like I mentioned in my article, I was describing the situation to a friend and I used the word unacceptable. And that was the moment that I thought, oh, damn, that means I need to not accept it. So I got to go.
And just for our listeners who haven't read the article yet, the situation we're talking about is when a coworker licked your face at a holiday party, a coworker who ironically was in HR.
Yes, this was the head of HR.
The head of HR.
He was HR.
So the culture was problematic there, to say the least. And before this incident, after every all company event, the next day I was in the head of HR's office discussing what the owner had said in front of everyone. The owner would make racist, sexist, homophobic comments at the expense of employees in front of everyone. And so he and I had been in conversations after every event. It was like, okay, time for our meeting where we're going to talk about what so-and-so said. And then when he became the problem, I was like, okay, well, I got to go. Because who do you talk to when the head of HR licks your face? It just sounds so ridiculous.
I mean,
to say out loud.
What do you do when HR licks your face? Like, I don't know. Gotta go.
The answer
is title.
Go get a raise. I mean, okay. One thing I will say for the amount of times I've jumped around, I have almost tripled my starting dev salary. You know, so that's nice. I've certainly tripled my teaching salary.
Certainly.
So, you know, and so I have had times where, you know, as I'm on my way out, they say, you know, oh, what can we do? Is there some amount of money? And then I will tell them the large amount of money I'm getting at the next place. And they're like, oh, okay, well, thanks. Have a nice life.
So if HR isn't licking your face and you're able to talk to HR, what are some things that like common themes that come up when you, that companies should be doing more of in terms of D&I efforts?
Great question. So I think that it starts with the language we use around diversity efforts. I was at a company that whenever we would talk about diversity would immediately jump to, well, diversity of thought is important. So like this person is from, you know, the University of, you know, Madison instead of the University of Milwaukee. Like, it's just like, this is not diversity. So there are some red flags in terms of like, whether the language is defensive in a, like, yeah, we're already doing everything we can, or, oh, it's a pipeline problem.
Yeah.
There just aren't enough women applying for our jobs, and that's why we hire all men. Okay. Can we, you know, like, dig in a little more on that? I was at a talk and I framed it as, you know, it's like if someone says the water in Flint, Michigan, it's a shame that the water in Flint, Michigan just doesn't want to be clean and non-toxic. It's like, no, the water's fine. You need to fix the pipes, right? So don't blame the pipeline. You need to be getting curious about, you know, one, you know, are our job descriptions inviting to people of all genders? Do we have a section in our, you know, FAQ about accommodating various needs? Are we offering parental leave that's equal no matter what gender you are? And are we calling it parental leave instead of maternity leave and paternity leave for our non-binary parents? You know, like starting to question, okay, so what's the language around what we're doing? And then, in addition to bringing people in, how are we building people up once they're here? You know, are we promoting our people of color, our women? Are we setting a clear path for advancement and championing those people when it's time for promotions? You know, a lot of people, when they talk about diversity, focus only on hiring because it's easier to say, well, the junior level talent is more diverse than the senior level talent. And it's like, yeah, because women leave the industry because it's infuriating to be here. So, you know, you cannot do the hiring piece without the inclusion and belonging piece with the folks who are already there. And it's hard because you do need diversity to get diversity, right? I was interviewed by 9 men for a job and I was like, oh, what am I doing here? And I went into the bathroom and there was a sign on the door that said, please don't flush girly things down the toilet.
No.
I'm like, first of all, there are not any girls in this building because we are grownups. And second of all, not everyone who menstruates is a woman and not every woman menstruates. Like, could we just say, like, don't flush sanitary products or whatever? Like, do we need?
And third of all, I'm going to throw my tampon in your face. Like, what?
I did not listen to those red flags. I actually did work for that company.
No. No.
But you flushed all your girly products down the toilet.
100%. I did learn over time. I will say that, you know, all of the places I've worked have helped teach me some things. And so I actually ended up in a good spot. So I work at Chime now and I love it. And by the time I was interviewing there, I had developed some, you know, a sense of what I was looking for in terms of the engineering culture. You know, I was asking about having a culture of teaching and learning. I was asking about, you know, what diversity measures were in place before the summer of George Floyd, when everyone realized diversity is an emergency. And I think the most important thing I did is I asked to speak to a woman engineer and a Black engineer. And most places I've worked would not have been able to provide those things. But then I was able to talk to those people about what it's actually like there. The thing that really stuck with me is I spoke with a Black engineer, and this was during the pandemic. And he said that while the protests were happening over George Floyd's murder, he actually missed being in the office and being with the Black community there. And I was like floored because my first thought during all of that was, thank God I don't have to go in the office and walk by a bunch of people who are like, good morning, nothing important is happening. And like knowing that my world is burning down while everybody else is just, you know, happily going about their day. And so to think that there was enough of a community there that he missed it was like, oh, okay. So they're doing something here, you know.
It's such a green flag. That's such a great thing to look out for and to just like demand to talk to those people. And if they cannot be provided, then bye.
Yeah, I am done being the only Black woman engineer at a company. Like, no, thank you. Well, the only woman and the only Black person. Like,
it's almost like you talk about experience tax, but then also you have another tax that's like you're like they're a teacher. You're like an educator to mm-hmm. these people. Like mm-hmm. you are going, taking time out of your day, having meetings with people, having meetings with HR to try to fix this situation to make it more inclusive for everyone. And I'm like, white men working at companies usually not thinking about that, not affected by those things, not worried, not bothered by it.
I will say this is also the first company I've worked for that compensates leaders of employee resource groups.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that before. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I actually get a stipend. I'm the, I'm a co-lead for AfroChime, which is the Black Employee Resource Group. And yeah, I thought that was amazing because I'm like, oh, I'm always doing this work for free on top of my job. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, thank you for acknowledging that this is work and should be compensated. And for putting money behind what you're saying you value.
Yeah. Because it's one thing to just, you know, giving like shout outs and slack, but
yeah,
it's like, you know,
if you pay me, that is the mantra of 2022.
It should be. And yeah. Does Chime have an office in Chicago as well, or are you fully remote? Yes.
Yeah. So there's their headquarters in San Francisco. There's an office in Chicago and one in Vancouver. And so my teammate, I have one teammate who started in the office in the before times. And he's like, yeah, I think he was there for like a week. And then they were like, okay, we're going to go home for a couple weeks.
Never again, never to be seen again.
I was on maternity leave when we went into lockdown, and my child just turned two. So here we are, folks, 2 years later.
Do we think your child will continue and be the fourth generation programmer?
That's a good question.
Maybe too early to tell. Maybe we don't know.
It's not too early to start planting the seeds.
Yeah, I'm trying not to impose too many things. I'm trying to expose mm-hmm. them to lots of stuff and see what they like. But they will know that it's a possibility. That's my hope. I recently started a business, and I was talking with someone about the why, like, why are you doing what you're doing? And one of the things I came up with was, you know, I want my daughter to see her mom as her own boss.
I love that. Yeah. That's so nice. Tell us about that LLC. Like what are you doing with that?
Oh, so, it's called Career Undaunted, and, I am an imposter syndrome coach. So I coach individuals on, you know, career changes, just, you know, getting through your day to day, starting a business, you know, whatever things folks are dealing with. And then I also work with companies on how to dismantle the systems that induce widespread imposter syndrome. I'm calling those imposter systems. And the main thing is creating a culture of belonging for everyone. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that lots of women, lots of people of color express experiences of imposter syndrome, and we just pathologize it like, oh, you have an issue.
Yeah.
That you don't feel like you belong, even though we have clearly set up systems to make you feel that way. And you don't see yourself in any of the leadership, reflected. And then the last piece is speaking. So I've been a keynote speaker at tech conferences, and I speak at events at businesses, mostly on imposter syndrome and imposter systems.
Wow. That's so awesome. That's so awesome. We just talk about it all the time. Like, I'm so glad you are getting paid. And, you know, like, we're not doing this stuff for free anymore. Monica, we need to take note.
I actually just sent 2 emails yesterday, saying, you know, thanks for the invite. I am not doing volunteer speaking activities during Black History Month or Women's History Month. You know, like, obviously, it's always important to pay Black women for their labor. There are causes that I think are important that I would be willing to donate my time to, but not in February and March. Like, F you pay me is the mantra this year. I've been speaking for free for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I'm cashing in.
I mean, on that note, thank you so much for speaking with us and gracing us with your presence. I'm like, while I was reading all of your articles and just everything, I was like, yes, boom, boom, boom. And I'm so happy we just get to talk to you, and everything you're saying, I feel like is just so helpful for so many people. Like, you're so right. Thinking that imposter syndrome, it's like a disease. It's an illness. It's like,
and also one that you just like catch yourself without like being around the contagion, which is like, as you said, like these the systems that have been put in place. Like it's remarkable how we all still feel the need to like internalize it so much when it's like, yeah, no wonder I've never had a female boss since I've been a right. software engineer. So of course there's part of me that feels like that's not my path. And I've never seen, you know, a senior architect. So I also don't think that's my path. So here I am, you know, 5 years into my career, thinking that this is kind of as good as it's going to get.
Yeah. It's institutionalized gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm always shocked when I see a woman coming out of a computer science program, because I'm just like, that sounds miserable. Congratulations yeah. for getting through it. And now you're here. And I mean, we've built a system that excludes certain people. And then when they feel excluded, we say, oh, you should work on that.
Yeah. And I can't in good conscience say like to high school kids, like, yeah, go pursue a computer science degree. I'm like, I didn't have to do that. And thank God, because I probably wouldn't have made it through.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, my mom talks about being, you know, the only woman in her classes, and it's like, oh yeah, but that was, you know, 40 yeah. years ago. And it's like, no, that is still exactly what it's like.
And that's 100%. I want to touch quickly on your concept of the hype squad as a way to combat imposter syndrome. Can you just tell us like what that means?
Oh my goodness. Thank you for this question. The hype squad is my favorite strategy for imposter syndrome. It's just the people that pump you up in your life. So it's your friends, it's, you know, coworkers. Hopefully you have maybe a mentor in there and someone who you're mentoring. It's, you know, it's people who are going to remind you when you're feeling some kind of way that you're awesome. You know, they're the people who are going to say, okay, well, remember when you delivered on that project and it was amazing? Because why are you acting like you don't know how to code right now? And they're the people that you can vent to when, you know, you have some experience and you're like, oh, was this sexism? I don't know. You know, and they're going to be like, yes, yes, it was. There's a reason that none of us have made it to senior yet or whatever it is. You know, they're just with you along the way. And it's so important. I have the world's best hype squad. And I always say that, you know, you need to diversify your hype squad. It can't just be your mom, right? My mom is my biggest fan, but it's so easy for me to dismiss what she's saying because she just has to think I'm great. And so that doesn't help me fight off imposter syndrome to be like, well, my mom thinks I'm cool, you know? Yeah. But, you know, when I'm building relationships with people and I'm seeing a pattern of like, yes, lots of people think I'm awesome. Maybe that's because I am.
No, totally. And I love the concept of having like a novice in there, someone you mentor, because mm-hmm. it's never really too early to start to mentor someone that, you know, like so many people are just starting. There's so many people on different stages of their journey. And I think that's when it really clicked for me, when I first had like an intern that reported to me and I was just like, oh wow. Like I do know a lot, you know, right. they're like so grateful for everything. They think you're like a genius and you're like, maybe I do know a little bit, a thing or two about this.
Well, and you forget that there's value in the things that you've learned, you know, folks will, you know, start a blog that's like, oh, I struggled on this thing. It was horrible. And instead of feeling like, oh, I'm dumb because this took me a long time, they're like, I'm going to write a blog post explaining how I solved it. And then 100 people look at it and they're like, oh my gosh, thank you for this information. Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, no, you pushed through a thing and you learned something. And you forget, it's so easy to forget how much you've learned or how far you've come, because you're always just in it. And so it's hard to step back. And so you have to start seeing yourself through other people's eyes.
100%. That's such a helpful tip.
Yeah. I think that is an excellent note to wrap this up on.
Yeah.
And let's all go out and find our hype people and just break these systems apart.
Yeah, find me, hit me up. I am happy to hype up everybody
for sure. Yeah, and you can find all of Teen's writing. We'll link in the show notes. And reach out if you are maybe interested in some coaching or you have
Absolutely.
A company that needs help dismantling some of those systems.
Yeah, Absolutely. Teen, what would be the best way for people to contact you if they are interested in learning more about Career Undaunted?
Sure. So careerundaunted.com is the website. And you can reach me at teen, T-I-N-E, at careerundaunted.com.
So awesome. Well, thank you for inspiring me to start up. We're just going to say you inspired me to go on to my boot camp journey. And now you are helping so many others. And I'm so glad we got to talk to you. And I'm going to subscribe to your Medium articles so I get notified immediately when they come out, because you just have some serious gems in there that I need to just consume. At all.
Yeah. You teased a little bit that there will be like a part two, a follow up to the experience pack. So we're waiting. No pressure.
You can sign up waiting. For email notifications. Yeah. that drops.
Well, thank you so much. Having me.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. And we will be tracking your journey from here, Teen.
Absolutely. Yes.